Okay, it's September 2nd, 1988, and we have with us Danielle Christman. Can you say your name?
Danielle Christman.
And where were you born?
I was born in San Pedro, California.
And when?
June 28th, 1965, and I was born into a family of addicts.
Okay, and what's your permanent address?
1268 Stonewood Court, San Pedro, California.
Alright, with this, I took your picture, and what this is for is a book that I'm doing called Attic. And on one page, we'll have your photograph, and then on the other page, we'll have your story. And hopefully I'm doing like 50 attics, and what I want you to do is what you think is important that happened in your life, some bizarre stuff, and your understanding of addiction, and what happened, and your spiritual path today, and just basically what you think is important about you, and that might help another addict who might read this book find hope, and, or the real world to understand a little bit about all of us, because we're all pretty much the same. And you see that I compile all this. To also try to speak up a little louder.
Well, I've always been a rebel, and that's the first problem. Being a rebel and always wanting to do what I want to do when I want to do it.
By the way, you have 90 minutes to talk if you like, and you're doing great so far.
I have a father who's a cocaine addict, so he drove us crazy. And when he got into cocaine, is basically when I got the fuck you attitude. And, you know, at home there wasn't any more closeness, and family get-togethers and this and that. There was always a major scene. And so I didn't care anymore, and I didn't care about them. Like, I cared about me, but I just cared about me having fun and about what I wanted to do. So this wonderful thing called punk rock started happening for me in about 79, and I was 14. And my parents tried to put a curfew on me, but I would sneak out the window, and I would go out to clubs and slither in at 6 in the morning right before I had to start getting ready for school. And I loved it. It was wonderful. It was complete freedom. It was do what you want and say what you want and look the way you want, and fuck authority. And that's where my head was at that time, because of my family all being on drugs and kind of doing their own thing. So, but I've always been a leader. I was always very popular and have a really strong personality. So what I did was I got into bands. It was the best way to express how I felt. And to kind of like be leading the scene, so to speak, even though there were hundreds of bands. But I had lots of organ lessons and guitar lessons as I grew up, but I couldn't remember how to play anything. I had blocked it all out, so I started singing. And I got in a band called Desecrated Romance. To rebel even further, because my parents decided I was getting a little too wild and they didn't know how to handle me, because they had too many of their own problems with my dad being on drugs, that they sent me to Riverside to live with some friends of the family. And in Riverside I was watched over real closely. so I really had to sneak around a lot. But see, that was just more intriguing for me. If I had to sneak around, that meant I was going to do it to even more of an extent. So I'd have to get up and put my little normal Mary Jane clothes on and go to school with a backpack and go to school and then put my cat eyes on and spike up my hair and change, and then I'd be picked up for school and I'd have to run to the bathroom and put back on my little prissy clothes, and everything was hunky-dory, so they thought. And at nighttime I'd have to sneak out the window and go play at clubs. And they had no idea. My family thought I was all doing really well. And I hadn't really begun to do drugs. I mean, I was popping acid and I was drinking, but compared to how I ended up, I hadn't even begun yet. I was just playing around with it when it came my way. Being in a band, there was always somebody willing to give me something, thinking I was an easy mark, you know, let's get her fucked up, this little, you know, cute punk rock singer, and then maybe we can screw her after the show. And that's the way they felt. But I always took real well to the drugs, and I could never get fucked up enough. So it never worked out for the guy who was feeding me the drugs. Anyway, I faked that I was going to kill myself. I was going to OD, and my parents brought me back to San Pedro. And I got even worse. They thought everything was fine, but they thought that to get out of there, I made this ploy that I was going to kill myself. So they took me out of Riverside and brought me back to my hometown. And that's when I met up with my group of friends that really got me to the NA program. They were a lot older than I was, and they were all in bands, and so I got in a band within a week getting back into San Pedro, and we were up continuously, frying on acid and shooting up speed. Anyway, God. That's just how my life has been. I've just sung in bands, and I did manage to go to beauty school. I got a cosmetician's license. I wanted a cosmetology license, but the quickest, easiest way out was to get a cosmetician's license, because that only took 6 months, and the cosmetology took a year. So I managed to get a career out of all of my using, which is rather odd for an addict. And it kept me in the money, which is where I needed to be, because I would work in nice places up in like Hollywood and Beverly Hills, and I would take money from the register so that I'd have my paycheck to pay my rent and my car payments and have the extra cash for my drugs. But I could never get high enough. I always wanted to get to that point of almost ODing, but yet not. That's just the way I like to do drugs. And the only time I did manage to OD once, but not, I was speedballing, and I just hit the ground and started flopping around on the ground for a couple minutes, and I came to, and I jumped up, and I just thought that was just like the coolest rush. But I'd never thought about it, but now I think of, you know, what a mind, you know, to get to the point of almost ODing, and that's like the best rush you've ever had. Tells me kind of what a warped sense I have on things. I tried the program about 3 years ago, left. And what got me there was I was living with three roommates, and I sold speed out at clubs, and I made a lot of money because I shot heroin. So I didn't use up my profit of what I was selling. And all the people that I was living with dealt coke. And they were all in bands. And one night they played at this place called Dancing Waters in San Pedro. And I was up at the Fetish Club in Hollywood. And over the PA system, they invited the whole club to an after party at our house. And I come slithering in at about 4 o'clock in the morning. And there's this raging party going on at our house. And the roommates that were having the party were out of it. They were just completely obliterated. And I couldn't believe that the party hadn't been busted up, because it was 4 o'clock and it was just outrageous. So I was trying to get people out the door, and before I turn around, they'd be coming back in. And before I knew it, disturbing the peace officers were there. But they didn't knock. And what I found out happened is they saw people doing lines of coke in the front window. I mean, they were so out of it that all the lights were on, the windows, the shades were open. I mean, they just walked up just to tell us to quiet down the party and get some people out, and they see people doing lines and immediately storm in the house. And I freaked out. I didn't know what to do, because out of all my roommates, I was the only one that shot up. And I knew what would happen if they, you know, they go twice as hard on you if they think or know that you're a junkie. So I ran in my room, and I locked it, and I started throwing everything out the window. Oh, and as a matter of fact, I was out at the club, so my roommates were using my room to deal out of, so everything was in my room. And I had, so I had to throw scales and tons of coke and syringes and pills and everything out the window. And they started knocking on the door of my bedroom, and I just ignored them, and I kept throwing things out. And I was halfway out the window, and they came in, and they just grabbed me and threw me on the floor, and knew what I was doing and looked out the window and saw all the stuff. And they went out there and they filled up, and they had a garbage bag filled with paraphernalia and drugs. And there was about 10 of us that got busted, and they handcuffed us all, and they found the syringes. So they said, "Oh, who's the fucking junkie out of this crew?" And they looked around, and they checked all our arms, and they saw it was me. And started calling me really sleazy names, and tightened my handcuffs, and said, "You're a waste of a human being, and you're the type of people that are polluting our society, and you deserve to be dead. Look at you, you little fucking bitch." And they tightened the handcuffs so that my wrists bled, and they threw me in the cop car. And when they threw me in, they threw my head against the window, and it so my mouth started bleeding. It kind of dislocated my jaw. Out of all the people, there's only two of us that are women, and they treated me the worst because I was a junkie. And so they piled 10 people in one cop car, and there were like 6 cop cars there. And when we got to the station, and they threw me in a cell with this most horrible girl. She was a little beach bunny prostitute that was driving me crazy, and I wanted to deck her, but I was so burnt out. I just told her to shut the fuck up before I whack you upside the head. And she left me alone for a while, and then she started gabbing again and bouncing off the walls. And finally, they let me make a phone call, and I called my mom, and she went bail me out. And everybody else had gotten out. I had nothing to do with this party. And everybody else had been bailed out, and I hadn't been bailed out. So I finally called my house, and my boyfriend said, "Yeah, we're selling all the drugs we can to get up the money to get you out. We'll have you out of there pretty soon." So we were busted. It was Saturday night, which was really Sunday morning at like 4 in the morning. So I spent the night Sunday night, and then Monday they pulled a real slick move. Nobody had bailed me out, so they decided that I wasn't going to get bailed out, and they transferred me up to civil brand, and which they didn't have the right to do, but they did it anyway. And so I, all of a sudden, I'm in civil brand prison because nobody could bail me out. And what I found out happened was, since they tried to get me up there so quickly, my roommates and my boyfriend had come with the money an hour after they transferred me up to civil brand prison. And when I was up there, I don't know, I wasn't scared. Probably because I was so sick. And they would tell me to get up and to go to dinner. And I would just say, fuck you, I'm not going anywhere. What are you going to do with me? I'm already in prison. You know, what more can you do to me? And I was throwing up. I was physically sick, and I was throwing up and throwing up. And they'd grab me, and they'd, their bunks, and they had me on the top bunk, and they'd grab me, and they'd throw me down on the floor and tell me to get my ass in line for food. I'm going. And I threw up on the feet of the guard, and I said, I'm not going anywhere. Fuck you. What are you going to do with me? Throw me in solitaire? Good. Get me away from all these bitches. But they wouldn't do that because they thought everybody was going to hassle me because I was a young little white girl. But they didn't hassle me because I had a fuck you attitude, so all the other prisoners thought I was cool because I was being rebellious to the guards, so nobody messed with me. But anyway, since that I shouldn't have really been up there, I got bailed out the next day, so I only had to spend, like, I don't know, maybe a day or a day and a half up there. So that made me think that maybe something was wrong and this lifestyle wasn't as cool as I thought it was. And I came back, got out of prison, and I went home, and I decided, I'm not going to live with all these people. This is a mess. If I was living alone, I would have never gotten busted. I knew I would never got busted because I'm too slick. I do all my dealing out of clubs. You know, I move from club to club. Nobody would ever know, and this would have never happened if I didn't have all these ignorant roommates. So I moved to my parents' house. And I drove them crazy within a month. And my mom was about ready to kick me out. And she said, you know, you've got to do something. So I decided that it was time to relax. So I'd go into a detox. And I went into a detox. And I thought, well, detox is wonderful. They hooked me up to an IV Valium. And I was out for 5 days. I woke up, and I was feeling great. I was feeling like a real human being again. I went through a 28-day hospital, and it was really groovy. It was this really neat hospital up in West LA that was called the Rockstar Hospital. And I was in there with this guy from Paul Revere and the Raiders, and this other guy from Fleetwood Mac, and we're all junkie musicians, and it was great. So I kind of like just cruised through, and I got out of the hospital and I went to a halfway house, and I got loaded a month later, so I got kicked out. So I went to another halfway house, and I'd have my friends pick me up, and we'd go out and we'd get loaded. And I'd come back right before curfew and go straight to my bedroom, so they never knew that I got loaded. And then one night I was just really too wasted on Quaaludes and on heroin that I just walked in, I packed up all my stuff, and I took off, and ended up in Venice, and woke up and couldn't believe what I'd done, and I didn't have anywhere to go. There was this guy I was going out with, and he was on the program a year sober, and he picked me up and he let me stay at his place. And after that, I stayed sober for 9 months. And I did really well, too. I was managing a beauty supply, and I got this really neat 62 Chrysler Newport. It was really cool. And I was doing good for myself, but I wasn't working a program. I was just going to lots of meetings. But I never listened. I never read the books. I still didn't believe in a higher power. So it didn't work for me. So my ex-boyfriend came back into my life, and we decided to move to downtown LA, and we moved into a loft, and I got back into my old artsy scene, and thought, well, I'm a junkie, and I can go out to clubs and drink every so often, maybe smoke a joint, And I did that for a whole 2 weeks before I started shooting up again. So now when I go to AA meetings as well, because I'm an addict, and an addict means I'm addicted to anything and everything. It's taken me 3 years to get back to the program. And in those 3 years, I went through four cars, just kind of lost them. And ended up doing things I never thought I would do. Working at a sleazy dance hostess club in downtown LA, pretending I'm attracted to these men that I'm dancing with, slipping quaaludes into their drinks, telling them I'll meet them down in the parking lot and do a trick for $100, and I would slip a quaalude into their drink. I would time it for 15 minutes, tell them to go down to their car, and after I got down to the car, within 2 minutes they'd be passed out, and I'd steal their money and I'd go back up into the club. And they would see me the next night, but they couldn't say anything, because first of all, they weren't allowed to do that, so they wouldn't be able to come to the club again. But they'd call me over, and you dumb bitch, you owe me, and da 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 da, and I'd smile and I'd walk past. And luckily, I only worked there 2 months. Did that for about 2 months, because I couldn't have got away with it for much longer. And I was starting to get a little paranoid, because they could have followed me home. Well, I always looked in my rearview mirror thinking, one of them's going to follow me home one of these nights, and I'm going to be in trouble. But there was guards that patrolled the parking lots, so nobody could hide in my car or try to beat me up at my car. So the only thing they could do is try to follow me home and then get me. So I pulled that off for a couple months. And then I got sick of that, so then I pawned everything I had and started boosting with a girlfriend of mine for a while. And I just got really tired. And one day, I'd been like on a week run. I'd been gone from home for a week, and I was making a sleazy drug deal. And the dealer knocked me, well, he jumped in my car. And I ran over, and he grabbed my hair and knocked me against the side door, and I kind of passed out on the ground, and he took off in my car. And this Mexican in his lowrider truck, all blasting rap music, pulls up, and he picks me up and puts me in his truck and asks me what happens. And then I told him to help me look for this guy, and he did. But what happened was I had a concussion, so I kept like passing out on him, so he brought me to the hospital and checked me into the hospital. And the next morning I woke up and I forgot where I didn't know where I was, and I forgot what had happened, and I realized it. And I jumped up, I jumped and grabbed my purse, I ran into the bathroom, I fixed because I still had my drugs on me, and I ran out of the hospital and I ran to my drug dealer right away. And then I didn't have any money left and no drugs, and my car was gone, and I didn't know what to do, so I had my mom pick me up. And she told me that she'll drop me off at my place in Hollywood, and she doesn't want to hear from me again until I can do something good for myself, or she'll get me in a hospital. And I didn't know what to do, because I was kind of tired of it, but I liked doing drugs. So I took a bath. I just lounged and took a bath because it'd been a rough week. And I got out of the bath about an hour later, and I told her, sure, I'll go into the hospital. In the hospital, they couldn't accept me for like 5 days. So my mom said, well, what am I going to do with her for 5 days? And I said, she's got to stay loaded. Oh, well, Mom. I'm like, that's okay. 5 more days, okay. So my mom had to give me the money to cop for 5 days, keep me loaded, until I got in the hospital. And I thought that was wonderful. My mom thought when I was helping me get loaded, how cool. I had the worst detox in that hospital. They were into this natural, organic amino acid trip. And I was a raging bitch for 10 days out of the 14 I was there. I didn't sleep for 8 days. They wouldn't give me anything to sleep. I'd never known such pain before because I'd always detox the easy way, and they were making me do it on my own. And that's one of the big things that keeps me sober now. I mean, I have a good program, but anytime I get that little inkling in my head, I remember my detox and what I looked like and what my body felt like, and getting to the point of having absolutely nothing, no self-esteem, which I usually have a lot of, and no morals, and just not a care for anything or anybody, including me, just not giving a damn. So I'm sober 4 months and 1 day.
All right.
And I have such a different attitude from the first time I went through the program. I read my books a lot, and I have all those little day by days and one day at a time. I have about 5 of them, and I read them every morning. I go to lots of meetings, and I call my sponsor, even though I don't like her that much. I've been looking for another one, but in the meantime, I've got one, and I've got a user. And I talk to my dad. My dad's on the program 4.5 years sober now. And we get along really well. As a matter of fact, we have the exact same personality. Really cocky, a real cocky personality. And when we use it for good, it gets us really far in life. But I love being sober now. I love the friends that I have. I have real friends, real people I can tell anything to. And trust. And know they're not going to just using me, you know. And people don't use you. What do they have to use you for, you know? And I have a God too. I was always scared of God before because I was raised in the Catholicism religion, and God damns you to hell for this and for that, and. And with everything that I had done, you know, I knew I would be damned to hell. But now I know that I've been to hell. And now I'm just working my way up to heaven. I lived hell. I didn't think I did. You know, I thought being recognized, being somebody in the club scene was like a really big deal, you know. And specializing in partying, you know, I thought that that's where it was at, but it wasn't. It was a living hell. It got me nowhere. It got me in debt. And got me mentally screwed up. All these people I've known for so many years, they're not my friends, you know. They probably don't even think about me anymore. I'm gone. They probably think I'm dead. The way I use drugs probably doesn't faze them though, because they're thinking about them and they're thinking about what they've got to take care of day to day. And sobriety is me. It's hard sometimes. It's hard a lot of times. Responsibility I've never been good at. I was supposed to start school. I'm back to beauty school a month ago, and I just started a week ago. I kept putting it off and putting it off, so I've got this to do, I've got that to do. So I still kind of freak out when it comes to responsibility. I'm not sure why. I guess just because I'm 14 years old mentally, so I've got to take small steps at a time. I never took responsibility. I had a chance to go to New York and model when I was 17. I was living in San Francisco, and I did runway modeling at this Fairview agency on Market Street. And this photographer just adored me and wanted to set me up in New York, but I wouldn't. I wouldn't leave my band and my friends and my junky world. And it's things like that, opportunities blown like that, that get me so angry. They make me want to succeed even more now, because I know I can do it, because I have a strong personality and I have a good will, and because I'm running on God's will. And it makes me really strong. It makes me know the things I can accomplish if I just set my mind to it. Sometimes at night I'll just sit and think, and all these wonderful ideas will hit me. And then I'll sit and think a little bit more, and I'll realize how I can achieve them. And then I get mad because I think, well, shoot, I should have achieved some of these by now, but that's okay, because at least I'm here. I went out for 3 years off the program, and I'm lucky that I made it back. I really am. I'm sure I could go out again, but I don't know if I'd make it back. I don't think that I'd have another chance. Not the things that I did and the people I'm around with. And the trouble I like to get into, it's like I like chaos in my life. it's really worth it to work this program, to participate and be part of. And it's a neat feeling knowing that everybody is, we're all the same, you know? We are all the same. We've all come from different places and had different lifestyles, yet we haven't. And we think alike, and we feel the same. And it's neat to have that many people together in a meeting or at a convention, all in one place. That you feel that closeness, and you just feel the serenity and the peace of mind. That's what I'm most happy with, is peace of mind, knowing I'm doing good, and knowing that God's working through me, and that I'm not in hell anymore, and that the devil isn't running me. He tries. I feel him like on my shoulder, like etching into the back of my head a lot of the time, you know. Let's do this. This is fun. You remember how much fun this was? Remember that? And I just want to scream. And I just stare up into the sky and, well, help me, you know. Remove this. Please, God, help me. Remove this from me, because I don't know how to deal with this. I can't take this. I don't want anything to happen. I don't want to take action on something really stupid again. And if I sit for a minute, it's removed. It really is. My obsession for using is lessening week by week. When I first got sober, I wanted to get loaded every day still. I liked being sober, but I wanted to be loaded. I wanted the best of both worlds. And now, there is no best of both worlds. Sobriety is it for me. I have to stay sober if I want to continue having peace of mind and serenity in my life, and friends, people that love me, and people that are willing to help if I ever need help, and to ever be able to do anything good in my life, I have to stay sober, and I want to stay sober. So now my obsession, I maybe have like once a week, and I can deal with it because it's real a small obsession now. And if I just ask God to remove it and sit for a minute and meditate, it's gone. And that feels really neat, because I never thought it would leave. I thought I'd love dope for the rest of my life. And I haven't even been having dreams about it anymore. I'm sure I will, even, you know, from time to time, but those have gone away too.
Should we end with that? Be real bad.